You are listening to the K1's Charitable Hearts Podcast with your hosts, Taylor
and Colin. Join us in our journey to spread kindness, knowledge, personal education, business practices, and charitable advances with others.
We hope this information inspires you and motivates you to give and to help others, and most importantly, put kindness first.
Today on the podcast, we have Miss Trish and Miss Barb with the Rainbow Riding Academy. And
I'm Trish Stanfield. Thank you for having me. I provide the facility to perform the therapy for the Rainbow Riding Academy.
And I'm Barbara Musner, and I am the manager of the staff and the volunteers that come to Rainbow Riding Academy.
We have had the opportunity to come see what y'all do on one of your Tuesday nights.
We saw you.
And right now you're in off season. So can you go over what your seasons are, and then we can go about what exactly the Rainbow Ride Academy is?
Okay. So we ride March through October, basically due to the season's weather. Mm-hmm. So during the wintertime, it's just too cold. And there is kind of a hiatus in the middle of the summer because our weather is just too hot, yes. And so we have some parameters on riding, and the feels like temperature has to be above 45 and below 93. So with that, we have some parameters for when we can ride that's healthy for our horses, for the volunteers, and for our riders.
Okay. Well, I guess the big question is, what is a Rainbow Riding Academy?
Well, so I'm just going to give you the history from where it comes from my standpoint. Years ago, 10 years ago, we had a young lady call us and ask us if we had an outdoor arena, and she called and said, hey, do you mind if I bring a horse over and perform at this therapy called hippotherapy? And so I think I answered the phone at that particular time, and I said, well, of course you can. Yes, we're going to share our arena. So she shows up with one little horse and four children. And my husband, Gary Stanfield, was leaning over the fence watching the whole process. And I, too, was watching the process. But I thought that, oh, hey, how sweet this is. These kids get to come ride horses. What a nice thing for them to do. So I went into the barn and was feeding and doing, and watched them put a young man on the horse who was his body had conformed to a wheelchair, so he was very muscly bound up. Can I say that? When they put him on the horse, and I was thinking, oh, how sweet. And I stayed inside, came up about 10, 20 minutes later, and when I walked back out, this young man was a different body. His legs were soft, and they were extended, and his arms were soft, and he was sitting different, and I had to stop and look and think, what in the world is with this? So I just kept on walking around, and I walked over to where my husband was standing, and he says to the therapist, he said, why are there only four children? And she said, well, it cost money. He said, well, how much money can it cost? She said, well, it's like, you know, they have to pay per service. And at that time, and I think it was 06, the kids were having to come up with $50 per 30 minutes or something like that, and the parents were already completely strapped financially with every other bill in the whole wide world. And I remember he leaned over that fence, and he did this little thing with his mustache. He says, I tell you what, young lady. He says, you go gather up another horse, and I'm going to get us some money. So he went home that night and called everybody he knew, and he did gather up some money and called her back and said, did you get a horse? And she said, well, I thought you were kidding. He said, I was not kidding. He said, I mean, for every child that wants to come out here and receive this therapy to be able to do so. So that's my first introduction to the Rainbow Riding Academy and what hippotherapy actually did to that one particular child that I watched that night.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It is amazing.
Is there anything scientific or science behind that?
Yeah, yeah. Clinical standpoint. Yes. Yeah, so hippotherapy itself is just actual therapy services while on a horse. And so we use different modalities such as a ball or a swimming pool or just a mat, various equipment. But the horse is the only modality that has a rotary movement to the hip, you know, the hip movement of the horse, which causes a neurological change in an individual while riding. It's also the only modality that can go kind of forward, backwards, up and down. There's a sensory component, obviously, to a horse, the heat, the smells. There's all kinds of input clinically that we can use, and that is the only modality we use with all of those factors. So it's pretty amazing. Wow. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite use of a modality is a horse. Mm-hmm.
It's very cool because the history of horse riding goes back, you know, way before the country mm-hmm. was ever formed and way back into, you know, European times. And to be able to use it now into something mm-hmm. that can help with these disabilities.
Yes.
So I'm going to step over my boundaries for a minute educationally, but I do believe that the Civil War was the first historical documentation of treating their soldiers' injuries on horseback.
Wow, really?
Don't hold me to that, okay?
Hey, I trust you.
Don't
a lot
go
more
Google
than
it or anything, but I think it's
true. Sounds true to me.
We might have to fact check that.
Scope it, would you?
What is your educational background that got you mm-hmm. into this line of work that you
okay.
do?
So I'm an occupational therapist, and so I went for training because I was interested in using this and interested in the Rainbow Riding Academy. The program really started in 2006, but by 2008, the program was completely free. And scholarship to all of our riders so that no one ever had to pay again for the therapy services. And so I was very interested because of my background in ministry and also my background as a therapist, because the basis of what was happening at Rainbow Riding Academy had everything to do with how God orchestrated that to happen. And the promptings of what I feel that the Lord did in Gary and Trish's lives to seek out the ability to have resources for our families so that they can enjoy this program. And so that combination made me very interested in working in the Rainbow Riding Academy and managing the program. And so as a therapist, I like to use a variety of different things. I hate cookie cutter exercise and things like that. I want everything to be extremely individualized for each person that engages in therapy services. I just want it to be very meaningful to them. And so my background led me to go for additional training. Occupational therapy in itself can use a horse, but I wanted to make sure that I understood about horses. I don't have a lot of background with horses at all. So I say, like, Trish is the horsey person. I'm not. So I want to understand the dynamics of a horse and the gait of a horse and the cadence of a horse to make sure I understood, like, how do I use a horse and why do I use it in this way? So that's kind of my background. And the application of therapy services while on a horse is very unique because of all the different factors I talked about. And if you can only imagine someone sitting in a wheelchair that is not able to use their legs, they can use their wheels to mm-hmm. move. But it is very different in sitting stationary in a seat than being on the back of a horse, because the actual movement of the horse actually moves your body as though you were walking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's actually transference from the body into the legs and the movement of the horse, whereas the dynamics of using a wheelchair to push with wheels is obviously very different for the human body. So all of that was very intriguing to me, and so that's why I got into rainbow riding.
I think we forgot to mention, but Rainbow Riding Academy is an extension of, or is it under the West Tennessee?
It is. It's part of the umbrella under, so West Tennessee Healthcare is kind of our parent organization, and then Therapy and Learning Center is below that, is part of the West Tennessee Healthcare system, and then we are just a service of Therapy and Learning Center. So we have multiple different services, and one of those services is the Rainbow Riding Academy.
Do you want to tell, the story that you told us when we first sat down, the time talking about, you know, Gary and his experience with growing mm-hmm. into it, and then where yes. it really came from?
Sure. So Trish gave her kind of wife side of the story, and watching, you know, her husband's interaction and also just seeing the horses. And so Gary Stanfill was probably one of the first cowboys I really ever got to know and got to meet. And so he liked to share kind of his legacy story, because that was important to him. And so the way Gary shared with me was kind of, you know, one of those folk tales or whatever you would say, that he would share this story in a way that was just really beautiful to me. So he shared with me that he met a young man at church, and his name was Pete. They called him Pete because he really couldn't say his real name, which was Jay. And so Gary met him, and this was kind of one of Gary's first experiences with somebody with special needs on a horse. And so he invited this young man who is nonverbal to ride with him. And so Gary had a couple cowboy friends in over the weekend, and they lifted this young guy who was in his early 20s at the time onto a horse. And what Gary saw was what Trish was describing. He had contractures in his arms and legs, and so the contractures are basically where you have shortening of the muscle and your arms are drawn up. And so while Pete was riding, Gary could really see and feel in his body, because he was riding Candace, which is like riding behind her tandem, and holding Pete so he wouldn't fall. Mm-hmm. And what Gary saw is that, like, a couple times around the arena, he was like, "Wave to your daddy." And so he actually could see Pete try to wave and move functionally where Gary didn't see that before. And then actually seeing Pete's legs kind of come around the belly of the horse, whereas they were drawn up before. So Gary would say, you know, he actually said, you know, he's kind of in a wheelchair position wherever he's at, because he's like stuck in that position. Even if he's not in the chair, he's like, you know, bent up. But anyway, so Gary also saw his legs come down. And so that, just feeling that change in this young man's body, was really remarkable to Gary. And as they went around and around, and this young guy's dad was watching, and he said, you know, "Say something to your daddy, tell him you're having a good time." And again, being nonverbal, you know, he can mumble some things and maybe have some verbalization of repeating what someone would say to you. But independently, when Gary said, "Tell your daddy you're having a good time," he said, "Yeehaw." And so with that, we recognize also a language production, which doesn't or hadn't happened for Pete. But in this situation, when you look at somebody that's nonverbal, you know, the general population kind of believes like they don't understand, or they don't know, or they don't have anything to give. And so what Pete was able to do is actually say something functionally and very appropriate for the situation when he was not given that information prior. In other words, he didn't say yeehaw. Right, okay. Right. So he said yeehaw, which meant to Gary that, wow, like, he really knows functionally and purposely what you would say if you're having a good time on a horse. Okay. So to him, it was just amazing. So as that was part of the prompting, I feel like, to Gary's spirit and heart, so that when he did experience watching our children ride and seeing what was happening, he said, okay, Lord's given me this prompting in my spirit that there's something more to this that a horse and a person can have together, something that God created, this beautiful horse, and something that also God created in his image, individuals that have special needs, that together, that combined togetherness can cause something so beautiful. And so for Gary, you know, being a cowboy all his life, like, horses meant a lot to him, but this was something totally different. Mm-hmm. You know, riding and doing things that Gary did was amazing to him, but to see this was something very interesting and very different for him. So then, you know, after he said, you know, "I want to go and gather up some money," there was another cowboy that was a friend of Gary's, that his name was James K. Taylor, and he was one of the integral parts of that fundraising or that money finding that, that Gary did. But that gentleman felt in his heart, as he knew Gary as a person, the integrity that he had, that giving him a contribution towards what Gary felt was really important was something the Lord had prompted him as well. And that that donation led to the building of our barn, which is named James K. Taylor Arena. But that exchange where Gary could see, you know, and share, again, the Lord prompts this other man, okay? Mm-hmm. And he said that, like, "I was prompted to give you this money." To me, again, is just how God wove into the Rainbow Riding Academy his blessing.
His provision.
His provision, mm-hmm. Exactly.
This beautiful puzzle that mm-hmm. we have, yeah.
Absolutely. And then, you know, really the last part of that story of Gary's legacy is that, you know, in the year 2012, he was diagnosed with stage 4 adenocarcinoma. And that year, we laid hands on Gary every time he came, and he said things like, "This rodeo is not over yet. I'm not kicking the barrel," you know, like all these cowboy terms. I used to laugh. But he asked me to sit with him about a month before he got very, very sick and passed away that end of that year in November. That he said, "You know, I have three things that are important to me, that this is my legacy, and that this is important to me, that it carries on even after I go on." And the three things he said is, first of all, I want this to be a ministry. This is not only a therapy, but it's also a ministry. And he's so right about that, because in so many places that kids have therapy, it's very sterile. You know, mm-hmm. hi, welcome, sit in the waiting room. You know, we do therapy, we thank them, everybody's good, they walk out.
And it cost.
And it cost. Yeah. And in this situation, it's a recreational, it's fun. It's outside of the norm. It's different. And families really, really enjoy it. And they have a place of recreation is a great place to meet people and to feel encouraged. And so part of the training that I do is to let our volunteers know that and to embrace individuals, because it gets very lonely when you are every day taking your kid to therapy and every day working and every day taking care of them at home. So one of the things that's the first thing Gary said is that he wanted it to be a ministry, and he wanted people to know that when they came, whether it was the families or the volunteers or the staff, that this is a place that God has honored, God has blessed, and God has, you know, orchestrated for his glory. And the second thing was that he wanted it always to be free. And he said, and I told him, I said, you know, I will do everything to continue that. You know, we can't guarantee. Life can have different struggles and things. But I said, you know, we will do everything we can to fundraise. And that is one of the reasons when you talked about this podcast, that was important to me, because that is part of it, is to bring awareness, because it is costly. It is very, you know, it's very costly to take care of. So he said the second thing is that we wanted to remain free to families forever. And then lastly, he said, so had you read the book of Revelation? And I said, yes. I said, please don't quiz me on all that. But you know. And he said, so you know how the Lord's coming back? And I said, yes, sir. He's coming back on a horse. And he said, yes, a white stallion. And he asked me, he said, do you think the good Lord will allow me to train that stallion when I get up there? And, you know, honestly, to look at Gary's history in horsemanship and who he was as a cowboy, I was like, absolutely, Gary, anybody could do that. It's you. So I said, I'm going to go on and ask the Lord. So to me, there's such a treasure in what we do, because it is, it's a blessing in what we are able to do, not only for our families, but for the volunteers.
Yeah, and, I see that in Madison. It's one of the biggest things she looks forward to every week, is coming out there and helping. And then now that she's about to start grad school, she's just like, she's torn apart. She wants to be able to come there.
We're torn apart too. She's leaving us. Oh my
people
gosh.
Come back.
Yeah. Even
come
when back. We were there, we felt welcome. Like, we were just there to observe. And you said that the first time you're there is more of a like a training. You don't get any hands-on. Mm-hmm. But even us being there and just watching, we felt welcomed. And that was a really good atmosphere to be in.
Yes, sir.
Especially if you want to donate your time, you know, once a week, that is a place that you know you can go to and make a difference and not feel like you're just a resource that can be disposable.
Absolutely.
And so, and it gives back, because like I said, I see it in Madison, I see it in her papa, and I see it in her mom, just, you know, how much joy they get from going there and actually volunteering and participating and seeing the kids and the families grow in the process.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing. So, we've been really blessed.
What I think is interesting is how Gary was, hippotherapy has been around long before, you know, Gary, and to hear of his exposure to it and how he discovered it and to see the way that you discovered it and how y'all came together.
I'm sure it was by no accident.
Right.
Divinely appointed.
And so how did that play a part in, you had the resource and you knew about that. Did y'all have to reach out to them, or how was that? How was your relationship?
To the hospital?
Yeah, how did your relationship build and to where
it
is today?
Okay, I'm going
to
tell you a funny story. So when they first came to the barn, we had the outdoor arena, and Gary was gung-ho. He was like, this is the greatest thing in the world. I have horses. I have children. I think this is just the most perfect place for me. And he had made all these plans, and the director of the Therapy and Learning Center had come to the barn that night to tell us, to tell Gary, he wasn't going to tell me, he was going to tell Gary, that they had decided not to have this program anymore. And
financially, like the hospital was like, you know, we can't, it's just not going to, you know, we're not going to be able to send our clinicians out there, and, you know, how can we pay them, and, you know.
Yeah. So, I, you know, Ron has told me the story three times, but Ron left that night not telling Gary that they were going to shut this program down, because Gary was like, no.
He wasn't even going to hear of it.
No. I've got this planned. You need to trust me. We're going to come up with this money. Because I have to interject here that we say that we are umbrellaed under West Tennessee Healthcare / Therapy and Learning Center. So the public just automatically thinks, oh, they have plenty of money.
Yeah, that you're funded by that.
We right. are not funded by them no, at all. The only separate. Way we stayed under that umbrella was to say to them, we will fund ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, really, that historically, I don't even know how that happened, but in order to keep the program, mm-hmm. they enabled us to they umbrelled us for a reason back some years ago, but we had to
convince them that it would be self sufficient. Basically, it is mm-hmm.
yeah. just so that they could keep it organized and mm-hmm. have the appropriate therapist.
And I was just going to say, part of that is the fact that truly there is a medical record that occurs on every ride for right. hippotherapy. We also have therapeutic riding. So there's two components to our riding sessions. We have two different programs that run within the Rainbow Riding Academy. One is therapeutic riding, and we have certified therapeutic riding instructors. They're fabulous. Mm-hmm. And then we have clinicians that are licensed occupational and physical therapists. Several of them are actually doctorate level. And so that in itself requires any clinician that lays hands on an individual, child, adult, needs to be under the care of a physician and also, have a medical record and medical necessity, things like that, in order for that treatment, even if it's free, okay, mm-hmm. just because of legality systems and then within our scope of practice and our licensure rules. And so all of that is can be very technical. So we needed to stay under the umbrella of the hospital in order to make sure that the integrity of not only are we providing the individual rider, but yeah. also the clinicians that are there right. are covered under their scope of practice. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's why.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. I've seen that. My mom's a nurse, and then there's been times where, like, if there's accidents and stuff, mm-hmm. it's very...
It's like, wait a minute, we need to look
should
up.
Should I stop yeah. or should I, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. Am I covered under the Good Samaritan rule? Yes, I am. Okay, let's proceed. So, yeah.
Because if people wanted to start something like this in their area, that would need to be something that they would have to reach out to is get a clinical backing.
Mm-hmm. And again, it depends on like what they want to do. They can do therapeutic riding, mm-hmm. And therapeutic riding in itself isn't require a doctor's order or anything like that. Of course, there's like releases for accidents and stuff that you'd want to have in place. Right. But yes, if you are going to be a clinician, then it's very important to be backed by a physician's order for the service you're providing under hippotherapy.
Are you aware of any other facilities or programs like that do exactly what you're all
there are like not a couple exactly, yeah, very similar there's a couple here in the state of Tennessee. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is my first time being exposed to anything yeah. like this. My brother lives out there by it, so we pass by it, and then my exposure is through Mass. Mm-hmm. And
we are the only free program, though, I will say.
Oh wow.
Yeah, we're the only free program in the state of Tennessee for therapy on a horse.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do for fundraising yeah. then, as far like is it through churches and stuff like that, or how do y'all go about?
So we have one major fundraiser a year, and it's from a family, a sweet, sweet family, whose son began the program with us 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. When he was five.
Sweet Caleb began the program with us years ago, and Caleb passed away due to some...
unforeseen situation mm-hmm. during surgery.
So we loved his family and through it, and they have loved us since then. They have a race the third week in September every year called Racing to Ride. We all pretend like we are going to do the 5K, and we never do. But we do the 1 mile fun walk for sure. Kent and Celeste have raised in excess of $200,000 over the past 10 years, for 8 years for mm-hmm. us. Every September, they put their heart and soul into this race that happens on behalf of the Rainbow Riding Academy in memory of Caleb. Mm-hmm. And we,
on behalf of his memory.
Are so honored to have them on our team. Mm-hmm. I just can't tell you enough about the Lott family.
And truly, we had an end-of-year celebration a couple weeks ago to celebrate the successes of the year and all the volunteers. And Kent spoke up and said, you know, as a daddy, I saw my son do amazing things. And, like first walking, first thing, all these things were what he felt was in conjunction with hippotherapy. And in addition to that, he shared with the volunteers that it was so hard. And when we hit before, they had to pay for a short time. And for him, that's what prompted his desire. He's a firefighter here for Jackson. And to him, it's like, you know, we're just kind of a middle-income family. But for us to be able to afford this, it was almost impossible. Mm-hmm. And to look at the number of children that benefit now, so many of those children are very similar in physical disability as their son, Caleb. And he just is, like, so honored by people's generous donations to scholarship these kids and young adults so that they can ride. And to him, he just wanted to express so much how much gratitude he has because he knows what position that put him in. And he said specifically, it was so hard for me to not be able to do this and to feel so financially strapped. He's like, I saw my son make these amazing gains. And it didn't matter what I had to do to achieve this. It was so important to me for him to be able to ride. And so for us to know that we scholarship and that all these, riders ride free is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And actually, I want to just put out some kudos to Logan. Celeste was pregnant with Logan when Caleb passed away. And their daughter has been one of our largest donor. Like, she did the best fundraising this year. She raised $1,700 on her own. Wow. And she's, how old is she?
Nine.
Wow.
Ten.
Nine. I think she might be older. I don't know.
How old are you,
so,
Logan?
So anyway, Logan at her young age, that we aren't sure off the top of our heads, has, you know, she by herself will fundraise in memory of her brother for what this program did.
And so we also have, we have clubs step up that send us monetary donations.
And businesses as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The Rotaries. Sometimes they just say, hey, this is going to be the Rainbow Riding Academy year.
Mm-hmm. Or churches that again, awareness out there.
Awareness, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And scholarshiping. In other words, if, say that, for example, someone has given them monies for something, they want it to go to a worthy cause. They want to see it actually dollar for dollar do something important and special. And especially with churches that they know that this is Christ centered. They know that the Lord has blessed this. And so they're very willing to donate to our mm-hmm. program.
And they know that it goes straight to the children riding.
Mm-hmm.
What is your operating cost for a year and per student or mm-hmm. patient?
On average, it's $60 per one ride per child. So we had over 75 children and young adults ride this year, and each of them receives 10 sessions. So,
wow. So it's a substantial amount
that
you need to fundraise for.
Exactly.
Do you want to discuss a little bit about that? Is it Walking So You Can Ride?
Racing so you can ride.
Yeah.
Do I want to discuss it in more detail? Would you like to?
Sure. So so Kent and Celeste, with the help of Mindy Moore, mm-hmm. this is our 11th year. And so in the third week in September, we solicit for runners, so human runners, and they give a donation, you know, because everybody's like, is that horses racing? What are you racing? So those runners will pay for their packet and basically get a T-shirt, and they run. It's either a 5K or 10K or a one-mile fun walk. And so all of those funds come directly to the Rainbow Riding Academy for our riders.
And that's something to look forward to every third week in September?
That's
always,
correct. Every
always.
Year.
Always.
11 years right. now.
And we go out as a unit. We go out and we have faithful sponsors. And so that's the week that we go out and revisit all of our faithful sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other fundraisers that y'all do as like that?
We've had some. We've had a bull riding at the farm before, which was quite fun, and a fishing
barbecue.
Bob does a barbecue for us, but we don't. But the Racing to Ride is our
big annual.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Why, do you have any ideas?
I mean, not really, not off the top of my head.
Something we want to get into someday is like learning how to do fundraisers for organizations. Mm-hmm. Like that's something that we feel led to do outside of this, but along with this.
Mm-hmm.
But so we kind of wanted to know how y'all went about that and stuff.
So it's about finding our tribe. It's about finding the right tribe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in the horse world is a huge tribe.
Oh, yes.
We just have to go make them aware of what we're doing.
Because
you can't go there and see it and feel it and not want to help.
That's
you
right.
can't. It's impossible.
It's like
impossible.
An animal person, you can tell an animal person.
You
like
can.
A dog person,
yeah.
dog lover. It's
yeah.
you know, horse people the same way. It's
yes.
like,
so I need every horse person we know.
Uh-huh.
It's, and it's like how you were talking about, you and Gary didn't know that there was this ability with horses.
No.
So you imagine how many people in
had
the horse
no
community
idea.
Like have no idea that they could help in this manner or mm-hmm. have horses that they could donate? Like, isn't that how y'all get some of y'all's horses? People donate them for a
people
time?
People do donate. We know we have some specific requirements on our horses, and our horses are all geriatric level, and they're all girls at the moment because it seems like the men just make everything topsy-turvy. They just are so demanding and controlling. I don't know what that is. So we have all mares. No comment. We have six. We utilize six horses right now. We started with one, Ginger. She's about 80 years old with a sway back, but she was lovely. Today we have six. We do rotate them out. We get them retired, so then when we retire them, they are really retired. Mm-hmm. But we're probably in the market for one next year. I don't want to winter a horse if I don't have to, so we will start looking in February for a new therapy horse. And it takes so many different attributes for these horses to work for our program. We've brought them in and sent them right back out. Mm-hmm. Wow. Because they can't be too smart, and they can't be too dumb, and they can't limp, and they can't
bite,
kick.
They
sure can't buck.
Yeah.
So they have to be old enough where they can't do all those things.
They have to be the kindest in nature.
And they need to be. They can't be a gated horse because of the modality we were talking about. They have to be. You know. So we tend to look towards these smaller quarter horses because they can't be too tall, mm-hmm. or we can't reach the children to hold their belts. I mean, I have a list.
So how many do you just seek out for a horse whenever you need one, or do you kind of keep the door open? Like if somebody were to approach you,
we seek when we need because it is expensive to keep a horse.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
They eat a lot of grass. I've gone from a nice little section of my farm for those horses to now they have the big pasture.
Wow.
Yeah. They it takes a lot of grass for six horses to stay, you know, and I like them fat.
Healthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fat and healthy. If they ever get skinny, it takes me 3 months to get the weight back on them.
Mm-hmm.
They require, you know, we trim their feed. We keep them warmed. We give them Coggins. We do everything for them that we would do for our own personal horses.
That's right.
And they are fat and sassy and
old.
I have a question. Have you ever experienced one of those horses having forming a relationship with one of your,
I would say vice versa. The children absolutely form a relationship with the horses. I don't know if I can't tell you the horses do. They do with the therapist, with the volunteers, because they see them. You know, we rotate the children out after 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I would say one thing that we have experienced is some of our volunteers that work with the horses and get them prepared and what have you, they'll ride a little bit to try to make sure everything's good. One will say, it is amazing to me because this one was being real sassy and not minding me and what have you. But then that child gets on and the horse was like,
okay,
this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm focused. Yeah, this is what I'm here for.
They know.
So they definitely, I would say that they respond in interesting ways to individuals that have special needs. It's like they have this sense that I need to be more
spiritual thing.
Mm-hmm, I need to be more gentle. I need to respond in this way. I need to be more, give more grace to whoever's, working with me. Like I need to just be relaxed. And so it's interesting to see horses respond that way.
And so Barb's job is a nightmare because the horses, we have fast horses, faster and slower, and we have, fatter
energy
horses. And so Barb's job is to make sure that the horse and the child, so in an autistic situation, mm-hmm. some of them require a more sensory
energy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. or energy from the horse.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it takes us that one session to figure out, hey, that was the wrong horse for this mm-hmm. child. We need to mm-hmm. swap over to Lindy because she goes faster.
Exactly.
Or slower.
Mm-hmm.
So it's her job is very challenging in making all the puzzle pieces fit together.
Right.
And in that, as we're saying, someone that has autism would need a lot of energy and movement and input because they need that sensory input. Whereas someone that has a floppy body or what we call hypotonicity, if you can imagine that if it's jolting, that individual cannot hold themselves or head and can, cause injury and things like that. So, yes, that connection in combination with the horse and the child or the rider is really important.
Wow.
One thing I want to mention too, that we haven't talked about is, you know, first of all, our volunteers, they just come and they show up, and we're super grateful for that. And so what I mean by that is we really never know how many volunteers we're going to have. So we pray a lot before the session happens and make sure, you know, that we're praying covering over them, and we're also praying that we have enough. But one of the things that we have done over the last several years is invite individuals that have special needs that may not want to ride or desire to ride, but that would help in the program. And so sometimes they don't have the physical capability of actually, you know, holding someone on a horse, but they are so many jobs to do at the barn. And that volunteer ability, places for individuals that have special needs to volunteer, is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And so we have actually have a new young guy in electric wheelchair who can open and close the gates independently.
He's pretty good at it,
he
too.
He is. He's awesome. And individuals that have autism that are what we call high-functioning adults with autism, they need that social interaction where there's not a lot of places that are very forgiving and understanding and helpful, and they just would kind of brush them away. Whereas in this context and in this setting, you know, we're like, okay, your job is to keep the table with all the snacks on it in good order. And let me tell you what a person with autism loves, things lined up, things in good order, things, you know. So, I mean, it's a great combination. So we get to use the skills and abilities of so many different people at the barn.
It gives them purpose.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you used three words just there. Forgiveness. What was the three words you used?
Grace,
forgiveness. And you didn't use patience, but you should have.
Mm-hmm.
Kindness is what you said. So I've never seen such a place with so many people, because there's 100 of us down there.
Mm-hmm.
With so many people on the same track.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
With the same purpose. It is the most, when you walk down there, you think, I have walked into complete and total chaos. And all of a sudden you realize that there's nothing chaotic about it.
Nope.
It's very purposeful.
I've been there a few times just for like events and things like that.
Yes.
But that night when we walked in there, it didn't seem like chaos at all. You could tell that it was organized, because when you seen the board where they had the riders wrote down and who was going to be a lead walker, who was going to be on the sides and different things, and who the therapist was that was going to be with that. So it's
fabulous.
It's very evident that it's all organized through and through.
And so, you have your volunteers who come back continually.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they do. You know, we have our faithfuls.
Yeah.
And then we have, it's sort of seasonal too. It's everybody's season in life, you know. We had a tremendous amount of very mature people this year. When I say mature, I'm talking about people my age. That was an age word instead of a. So it's just, and you can come, you know, like some students, some people will show up at 3 and stay till 5. Mm-hmm. And then people get off work at 5 and they stay till 8. But the amount of people that come through is just so exciting. And so maybe next year the same people after 5 o'clock won't be there next year. Maybe it's going to be a different group of people. But we always go out and find them, and they always come.
And that's what we're hoping to expose you to, new volunteer group.
Right,
yes. We also take level 1 and level 2 clinicians. So when you are going through your studies as a clinician, as a therapist, you have to have like some job shadowing and job training and on-the-job work. And so we take students as well out there to meet that need. We also, so volunteers come and they have their hours tracked at the volunteer department at our hospital. And so like 2 years later, someone needs to make an application for something, they'll have all that community service there available to them. We also write letters to folks that are trying to apply to school, because we can actually say, hey, this young guy, he was excellent with kids and he was very patient and he was very kind and he was very attentive and he was whatever. So I can actually, you know, not to say, hey, I know this kid at church, but no, I saw this kid and I can see, you know, how well he does with families and how kind he is and how, you know, like somebody said, oh, you know, Minority's cleaned up in the second arena, you know, like he jumped up and got the rake in the bucket. So there are a lot of things we can do. In addition, one of our physical therapists passed away. She was an amazing young woman. Her name is Kelly Nelson Gaffney. And she got cancer after the first year, ovarian cancer, and she passed away. And so we have a scholarship in her memory and in her name that people contribute to. So we've been blessed to give a scholarship to a senior, someone applying to school in their first year. So you have to have 100 volunteer hours in order to apply. And we had 5 people this year apply for the scholarship. So
I just want to point out that there are benefits to volunteer, not just a change of heart, but, you know,
Absolutely.
Their support community service can be recorded, and that so that's pretty cool to know. Mm-hmm. And I hope that there will be somebody who would be interested, because I know at a young age I was in Boy Scouts and we went horse riding, and I was like, well, I always wanted to go back and do that, but yeah. I didn't really have anyone to get to. So this is a great opportunity to be exposed to horses, mm-hmm. and to be around them, and then also with occupational therapy. If mm-hmm. you're interested in that, one of the things that we're wanting to kind of promote is how you don't really, sometimes you can go through life and not know what your true calling is until you get experienced and Absolutely. Exposure to it. So that's a good way implore people to try it, just to see what it's all about.
Well, it's kind of what happened with Madison. Is she had the idea that she wanted to do therapy, and then she started, job shadowing at different places and started volunteering out there with y'all, and then it just became evident, like, that's what she's meant to do.
Absolutely. Great point.
And that's where she's, I think so, too.
We've had many volunteers that were like, I was going to be a something, and I came out here, and I'm like, wait a minute. This is what mm-hmm. I feel like the Lord's calling me, or mm-hmm. this was something I never realized I would love, and I'm so drawn to it. So now I'm going to change my career path. And
so many different careers, too, because physical therapy, occupational therapy, teaching.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Special ed, there's so many different opportunities, and with being involved with these people, with Barb and her staff being involved with West NC Healthcare, it's good connections.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a mm-hmm. all-around win-win.
Is there any piece of, or what pieces of information would you, if you could travel back in time, would you tell yourself, say when you were first starting out, to help this process go smoother? Or if it's just any advice that you would?
So we were kind of talking about that earlier. I'm gonna let Barb talk while I think.
Okay. So one of the things that I ask volunteers, and this is a little bit difficult, and it's difficult for any of us, that when I have a family there, I want them to feel supported. And so part of that is to try to be mindful of the ability to connect with others. And so that's something we want to teach out there. And so over time, I've been able to see that. My worst thought is, like, I see a family there, they're watching their child, which is really wonderful, but they're alone.
Mm.
And the aloneness is one of the most difficult things for individuals that have family members that have special needs. And so I would want to speak more about, hey, will you go down and talk to that family a little bit? Just ask them how their day is, And for all of us to have that ability.
Right. To feel welcome.
Exactly. And all of us to have the ability to just have that human interaction and be able to, like, how are you really? Oh, fine, yeah, great day, But really underneath that is struggles. And I feel like that human connection there and just promoting that, if I could have seen that, many years ago, I think it would build more of that into our program. And we have the last couple of years, so that's been beautiful.
So not just be a place for the patient, but for the patient's family.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen that with Madison, like going to that I Can Drive mm-hmm. the other day where she was talking with the families, and you could tell there was a relationship there outside of just with the child. She knew the family and knew circumstances and got to talk to them and be relatable and different things like that. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so segue off of that, I guess probably I would step out of my comfort zone sooner, because it took me, I thought, I still was of the mentality that, oh, what a sweet little outing. Hmm. But Barb's completely right. It is a life that all these families are living, and these parents are exhausted. And I also, I was that person that didn't know how to communicate with nonverbal children. I thought, if they're not verbal, well, then they can't understand me. So there's no point in me being verbal. And my whole world has been opened up to...
Sign language?
No, not yet.
Working on it.
This winter, though. I'm committed. To what they understand. Hmm. To the fact that the conversation you're having with them, first of all, makes their parents happy. And they understand. They might not be able to...
reciprocate back.
Mm-hmm. But you just watch those eyes. Yes. They get it.
Their whole body language.
Oh, my goodness. So I would have stepped out of my bubble way before I did.
That's like you're talking about, though, how he knew to say, Pete knew how to say yeehaw, mm-hmm. because they're like sponges. They take everything mm-hmm. in.
That's right.
They just there's some mechanism in the brain that prevents them from reciprocating it back out, you know, and they have that trapped inside them, and they want to, you know. And I've seen it. When I was a kid, we had some financial hardships, and my grandmother used to have to babysit me, but she was a sit-in on the bus for special needs schools, so I had to ride with her.
That's awesome.
So I had a lot of experience with special needs children when I was younger, and getting to sit and talk to them, and a lot of them they couldn't communicate back, but some you could tell they were trying to, but they just didn't know how. And I've seen that, and you know, you can see that inner struggle, and I couldn't imagine going through life.
Well, I think
like
too that the bottom line is the language of love doesn't always be spoken in words.
Correct.
And so I feel like one of the most important things about the Rainbow Riding Academy is that it's full of love, and that the volunteers feel loved because they know how important it is for them to be there. The riders feel loved because they can the expression of love from volunteers who don't need to be there, they're not paid to be there. They love the people they're working with. And so the language of love does not always have to be verbal. And so when you see a child look at you and be so excited, like coming out of their skin excited because of your love for them, because of what you're doing to care for them, is amazing.
It's so true. It's so truth.
So let's talk about a little bit of the volunteer opportunities and how people could get involved and how people can donate.
Okay, volunteer opportunities,
of course. And what you were talking about earlier, like what things that y'all need more donations of.
So beginning next February, first of all, let's everybody know the Rainbow Riding Academy on Facebook, spelled like a horse rein, R-E-I-N. Everything we do is there. Application process points you. It's got all the
you can receive everything you need.
You must be over the age of 14 to be in the arena. Is that correct?
And to like as a volunteer to hold a child or to make sure the rider. Now sometimes you know there's a 13-year-old that's very mature and a large enough stature that they can hold. But yes, 14 is the minimum age to be a sidewalker.
Yeah, so you have there's a little process we go through. We have a training. Spring training meeting. But you really have to have no qualifications.
That's right.
We're going to train you.
Desire.
You're going to come and love our children with us. You can be 90 or you can be the 9-year-olds have a job too.
Open, close the gates. All the
we
things
have jobs
we
for everyone. Bring your, you know, the families can come. So it's an application process and it begins in February and March and we'll have our first meeting. Fundraising.
When y'all meet is every Tuesday.
Oh, I'm sorry.
During the season?
Every Tuesday through from March until October, from 4 p.m. until about 8 p.m.
Our last ride finishes at 8, so then there's a cleanup process. But
Yeah. Okay. So I have some horse people. We have some designated horse people that show up at 2 and 3 to get the horses up and get them ready. That's just a different group of horse
volunteers.
Lovers that have been with us some years now.
But we always want like people to help.
We absolutely do, and you don't have to be there from 4 until 8.
Yeah, right.
Every single session is 45 minutes. We have a board that you sign up for. You can even call and say, I think you can even email now and say, I want to go at 6:45 with little Darren. I made up a name. So we've got it to a fine process now where if you cannot get off of work and you know you want to volunteer, you can submit that via online.
Awesome.
It's awesome.
And so as far as our needs, and that's, again, one of the reasons I really appreciate this podcast is to give folks ideas and thoughts. We will post periodically through the year things that we need. Right now we need a camera. Our camera doesn't take very good pictures, and so we need a camera that can take some really fast pictures, some action pictures without being so completely blurry. But there are things throughout the year like bedding, and sometimes we need dewormer, and sometimes we need, you know, just different things to take care of the horses. But then also saddles and helmets, every single thing is donated. And sometimes we have unique situations where someone is a very tiny person, but they need a saddle, or they need a Western, or they need English. So we have a variety of needs, and I post that on Facebook. But the awareness of our needs is really important to me. One is to be aware that we need funds, and then the other is that we need different items throughout the year. So.
And what is an item that people are not that you need more of? That
So really, it's whatever people have the ability financially to do, from snacks, because our snacks are free, to our volunteers are there for 4 or 5 hours a night. And so, like, people get really hungry. So sometimes we have people that bring homemade snacks and cookies and, you know, refreshments through the night. So that's always something we need. And then, of course, things for the horses through the year. You know, we need shampoo, and we need, you know, cleaning products. We need dewormer. We need fly, you know, natural fly repellent. So there's all kinds of things that we need through
the
year.
More her?
She's looking at me. I'm going, yeah, you're doing good. You're doing good.
So, like, there's all kinds of things that we need.
Shavings for the stalls is something that you said.
Yeah, bedding. You know,
lead lines. We got, you know, lead lines only last so long. Mm-hmm.
So people, if they have, like, you know, a financial ability to donate, they can be in touch with either one of us, and we can let them know what we're in need of. And then we do, like I said, we put online things that we do need through the year.
Awesome. You have anything?
I mean, just the kind of our closing thing, you know, how has kindness shaped the process? You know, what was one of some of the main things that kindness has helped you do throughout this?
Wow. So, you know, I can't even, I was saying that nobody walks through the barn doors that I don't see kindness just dripping off of. Mm-hmm. I would just say that kindness has, our program is shaped by kindness.
That's right.
There's no way. If you are unkind, you are not going to like our program. Mm-mm. You are really not going to stay very long.
But we can help you be kind.
Yes, we can.
I will tell you, we have individuals that have come and then been, like, very stern, and they're like, I don't know about this. And, my friend brought me. And they'll watch for a while, or they'll stand back for a while. And then slowly they're like, wow, you know, I think
Grinch.
Yes, exactly. Like, I feel like I can do this, or I feel like I have a place here. And because we share kindness.
And when you
throw kindness like confetti, you know,
kindness is king.
Yes.
And when you see it on those kids' faces, you just, you know, because I mean, just even my experiences as a child, and then even I had some family friends, and even one of my family members, she has cerebral palsy, and just getting to see, you know, the struggles that they have, and when you see somebody in those situations light up like that, it's infectious.
So you just see the volunteers, the kindness that drips off of our volunteers just when they see each other, just not even the children. I mean, the children are a whole different ballgame. But when they walk in, it's like they have stepped into
the family. Yep.
Yes, the twilight zone.
Happiness.
Yes.
Enjoy.
It's just lovely.
It is lovely.
Is there anything else that y'all wish to discuss on this podcast?
I wanted to say that what Trish Stanfield does for our program, Miss Humility over here, like, she doesn't want any kudos to be her, but she has a choice to continue to allow us to be at her farm. When her husband passed away, you know, she made a decision to continue on. What she does for our program is a choice, and it's about giving of the resources that she has, to give to a cause that she believes in and that she knows is blessed by the Lord. But it is a choice. Mm-hmm. And so really, when it comes to individuals that hear this podcast, everything, all the resources you have, is a choice to do what you choose to with it. And I'm just going to say how grateful I am. Because Trish is like she's iconic to the program. Her love for people is infectious and deep and beautiful. And I'm so grateful for her to be part of our program.
Thank you.
The only other thing that came to my mind, is there any sort of goals that you have coming into this next year that you are striving for?
I have a big goal. It's a big goal. I want to cover the outdoor arena because it's 104 degrees out there in the summertime. That's just a little goal. It's just like a $100,000 goal. But it is goal.
Yeah, and I would just, in seconding that, the arena itself, like, when it rains, we have to move everybody inside. And so we have 5 or 6 horses working together in a very, you know, in a small space for 5 or 6 horses to work with children and adults. And so, yes, absolutely.
We're going to find a way to do it.
Do y'all keep those, like, heated in the wintertime? Like, or is it just...
We have some small heaters, but not, no. But we do have some fans that Gary traded out of a factory, which was beautiful. And so we do have some great fans in there during the, you know, during the summer months. But in the winter months, we close it up and put some heaters on, and we have a lot of body heat.
Yeah, so that is a small covered arena, because when we were there, I think y'all just had 2 horses going in there, and that seemed crowded for them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So I can't imagine having 5.
Yeah. Well, our therapeutic instructors and children, I mean, I had to sub for one of them this summer. I was going, like, it is 110 out here. What is going on?
Yes.
So anyway, We'll do it. If it's meant to be done, we'll do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Lord will provide.
Big goal. Big goal.
Speak it to existence. Yeah.
Yep.
It's feasible.
Mm-hmm.
We thank you very much for coming on and sharing your story. And it was a great honor to come out there to witness firsthand what y'all have done. And we hope to share your mission and your heart to hopefully millions.
As many people as we can get.
I hope to see both of you again.
I know. And I just want to mention that people can come and just watch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You don't necessarily, if you're like, I just want to see that. Or I just want to see if it's something that I would like to do. We welcome people to come. Now, we do, pretty strict as far as who lays hands on kids. They have to have background screens and things like that. But, if you come and just meet Trish or I there, I would love to let you, anyone that hears this podcast would want to just come and see it. We invite people to come and watch.
Awesome. So. Great. Anything else?
That's it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Kindness first.
Kindness first.
Thank you for listening to the K1's Charitable Hearts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and would like more information, you can find it at k1media.org. You can also find our social media links to stay connected with our social media, read our blog, and suggest content for our next episode. If you enjoy this podcast, support it by purchasing merch through the shop tab, subscribe to our podcast on your platform, and leave a review. Thanks.